Chapter 48, Contemporary Philosophy. Section A, Overall View. We can say that contemporary philosophy begins in the 19th century, and more specifically with the cultural age of Romanticism, the prevalence of feeling and life, a sort of gigantic movement to objectify human subjectivity, a climax of immanentism. To single out the most significant philosophies of this period, let us take a look at the following passage from the encyclical of Pius XII, Humani Generis, in 1950. While scorning our philosophy, they extol other philosophies of all kinds, ancient and modern, Eastern and Western, by which they seem to imply that any kind of philosophy or theory, with a few additions and corrections if need be, can be reconciled with Catholic dogma. No Catholic can doubt how false this is, especially where there is question of those fictitious theories they call immanentism or idealism or materialism, whether historical or dialectical or even existentialism, whether atheistic or simply the type that denies the validity of reason in the field of metaphysics. In the 19th century, there were several attempts by theologians to rethink the Christian faith in terms of modern philosophy, without realizing the implications of its immanentism and the fact that it actually arose as a rejection of a Christianity transcendent to man. As we have seen, these attempts were made, for instance, with Kant and Hegel, but of course the Church disowned them all. Attempts have been made later with Henry Bergson, 1859 to 1941, which provoked the crisis of modernism and the neo-modernism of Teilhard de Chardin, which was also combined with Marxist ideas. Section B. Georg Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, 1770 to 1831. Hegel, also influenced by his contemporaries Fichte and Schelling, is one of the most influential thinkers in modern philosophy through his radical immanentism. His system, coming in the wake of Kant and at the height of both the Romantic movement and the Industrial Revolution, is absolute idealism. Absolutely everything is reduced to idea, but it is dialectical idealism. Let us explain this as a basis for the understanding of Marxism. According to Hegel, all things we see around us are expressions of ideas. This man is an expression of the idea of man. This table is an expression of the idea of table. Now, the most simple of all ideas, and therefore the first, is the idea of being. But the idea of being is negated by its opposite, which is non-being. Both of these ideas are, according to him, pure indetermination. Hence, they neutralize each other, and out of this clash there emerges synthesis of both, the idea of becoming. But rather than a synthesis, this is a confusion. In Hegel's mind, since the pure indetermination of being, the richness of content of this concept, is the very opposite of the pure indetermination of non-being, the poverty of content of this concept. Hegel confuses these two concepts, a violation of reality, typical of idealism, and finds therein that idea is essentially dialectical, i.e., it affirms itself, thesis, then negates itself, antithesis, and then takes the best of both into a higher stage of development, synthesis. Thus, idea, i.e. reality, is essentially a becoming. Change and temporality are real. Immobility and eternity are not. This is then dialectical idealism. Ideas progressively negating each other, thereby mediating each other and synthesizing into higher ideas. Conflict and change are at the very heart of reality. As Heraclitus had said in the 6th century BC, and all reality is in a state of flux. Dialectics means the confrontation of ideas and their development through it. Thus, the human spirit, Geist, reveals itself to itself in a phenomenology incarnated in the cultural history of mankind. Hegel opened Pandora's box with his dialectics. It is significant that opposition or contradiction, Widerspruch, equals counterstatement, is the soul of his contemporary romantic movement in the other cultural fields. Goethe and Beethoven were both contemporaries of Hegel, as well as the idea of challenge in the Industrial Revolution then taking place. The romantic mood rebelled against anything that would put limits or rules to the free feeling of the human spirit and recognized no authority above it, while the thrust of industrial development and wealth increase would brook no trammels to free enterprise. Section C. Marxism. Of the philosophies mentioned by Pius XII in the quotation, let us now take materialism, historical and dialectical. This is precisely what Karl Marx, who lived from 1818 to 1883, called his philosophy, which now dominates such large areas of the world. Historical materialism is the philosophy which maintains that all history is determined, see chapter 30, section C, by the economic structure of society, i.e., by the system of production, distribution, and exchange of material goods and their ownership. According to Marx, in every society, there is an infrastructure which is the economic system of production forces and production relations, and a superstructure built on it, made up of all the customs, institutions, values, laws, cultural traits, and artistic expressions, all of them determined by the economic system. See chapter 30, section C. Dialectical materialism is like any other kind of materialism in that everything is reduced to matter, but with the addition of dialectics. Marxists always claim that their materialism is scientific, not like the other crass materialisms. Marx took from Hegel both the dialectics and the revolutionary bent, but transposed them both to the field of matter, economics, and politics through a radical atheism and materialism inherited from Ludwig Feuerbach, 1804 to 1872. And from the 18th century French materialists like Diderot, Lemaître, and Halbach, and from the British pragmatic materialists like Hume, Adam Smith, and Ricardo, ideologists of the Industrial Revolution. Marx thought that Hegel had indeed discovered in the dialectics the secret of reality, but by locating it in the ideas, he had it upside down, since ideas are only reflections of matter in the human brain. Matter is the only reality, but dialectics is indeed the inner force of progress in the evolution of matter. When Darwin published his Origin of Species in 1859, Marx hailed it as the scientific confirmation of his dialectical materialism. The animal species, in their struggle for life, clash with one another, thus evolving into higher species. Thus also the social classes. There are no individuals for Marx, since man has nothing that transcends his material integration in society. Resulting from the dialectical opposition of exploiters and exploited, struggle with one another by successive dialectical stages until the perfect society will be achieved without classes and without private property, which is the cause of the economic alienation of those who become exploited. For Marx, religion, the opium of the people, is the ultimate alienation of man, and every critique must begin with a critique of religion. But the most fundamental alienation is the economic one, which leads to the social and political, and finally to the religious alienation, which, according to Marx, is the summit of man's degradation. The revolutionary action, praxis, not theory, whose aim is the abolition of private property, will finally achieve the total liberation of man from all alienations and the definitive elimination of religion. Here, the earthly future of mankind is substituted for the transcendence of God in the afterlife as a result of eliminating everything transcending pure matter, such as the spirituality and immortality of the human soul. No ground is left, therefore, for the dignity and rights of the human person. The two standard works of Karl Marx are the Manifesto of the Communist Party, which he published with his friend Friedrich Engels, 1820 to 1895, in 1848, and the well-known Das Kapital, which was published in 1867. Between those two works stands Darwin's Origin of Species and the development of historical materialism into dialectical materialism. Marxism was first successfully imposed by force in the Russian Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, led by Lenin, 1870-1924, who set up the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics as the transition stage of socialism envisioned by Marx, whereby the proletarian class seizes the capitalist state and uses its machinery of power to forcefully integrate everyone into society by appropriating all the means of production and exchange. When this integration has been completed, the state will wither away, and communist society will emerge, where man will be totally liberated. It is obvious, once we know it well, that this totalitarian philosophy, it is not just an economic theory or a political system, is absolutely irreconcilable with Christianity, and so has the Church declared it from the very beginning. The most lucid and thorough exposition and condemnation of Marxist communism is found, as was already mentioned, in the encyclical Divini Redemptoris in 1937 of Pius XI. The reader is also referred to our earlier comments on Marxism, see Chapter 1, Section C, Chapter 8, Section D, Chapter 11, Section D, Chapter 14, Section A, Chapter 21, Section J, Chapter 25, Section C, Chapter 32, Section C, Chapter 33, Section A, and Section C, Chapter 36, Section A, and in the previous chapter. See also Chapter 43, Section C, on private property. Section D, Other Kinds of Materialism. We can single out three main varieties. 1. Positivism. 2. Pragmatism. 3. Evolutionism. The three of them are related, and they have a great deal in common with Marxism. Their common root is a materialism which is the result of immanentism. See Chapter 21, Section J. Let us recall the summary we gave in Chapter 44, Section B. After the Renaissance, philosophy went through these two stages. 1. Reduction of the supernatural to the natural. 2. Reduction of the natural to the material. This is quite logical. First, God is eliminated by making him a product of man. But if there is nothing above man, the origin of man must be below him, in animality, brute life, and ultimately matter. Evolutionism, then, comes into the picture and conceives man as the spearhead of matter and evolution, appropriately clothing itself in scientific garb, although the theory of evolution is too full of gaps and missing links to be considered scientific, as Pius XII cautioned in Humani Generis. Such are the philosophies of Spencer, Bergson, Haeckel, Alexander Whitehead, and Teilhard de Chardin. Besides, if we must confine our knowledge to our materiality, our only positive knowledge is the scientific knowledge based on strict observation of facts, and the explanation of facts themselves as distinct from imaginative explanation, theology, or rational explanation, metaphysics. Thus, we will arrive at the true cult of humanity. This is the positivism of Comte, 1798-1857, later transformed into the logical positivism of Wittgenstein and the Vienna Circle. And finally, we have the ethical approach. What is good? What makes man happy? What is evil? What makes man unhappy? The latter is pain, the former is pleasure. What is true? Whatever works, i.e., whatever procures the happiness of the individual in this life. This is pragmatism, the typical American philosophy of the cult of immediacy and efficiency, William James, John Dewey, also related to the British utilitarianism of Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill. These three varieties of materialism, which have developed outside Marxism, could also be called vitalism, because, as we said, life, brute life, becomes the basic reality, i.e., life immersed in matter in a state of evolution. Between this vitalist materialism and Marxist materialism, there are many points of contact. For instance, we can detect pragmatism in Marxism, in the latter's philosophy of praxis, whereby revolutionary action makes the truth, and whatever works in favor of it is progressive, and therefore good, while the opposite is reactionary, and therefore evil. And we can also detect both positivism, evolutionism, in the Marxist philosophy. The materialism of the West is not therefore totally incompatible with Marxism, but both of them are incompatible with Christianity. Section E, Existentialism. This is the philosophy mentioned last in the quotation from Humani Generis. We can apply the term first in a broad sense to a philosophical movement which arose after Hegel, less materialistic than those just discussed, but also affected by subjectivism. As Hegel had attempted the absolute objectification of subjectivity in the sense explained, other philosophers, without abandoning the romantic and immanentistic spirit of Hegel's philosophy, reacted against it on behalf of subjectivity itself, so to speak. Schopenhauer, 1788-1860, did so by exalting the will above reason. Kierkegaard, 1813-1855, by exalting existence above essence, and Nietzsche, 1844-1900, by exalting active life above passive rational conformity. This was an understandable reaction of individualism against collectivism. See Chapter 37, Section D and E, and Chapter 47, Section B. As we have seen, for Hegel, as for Marx, the individual does not really exist. Only man as such, only the essence, man, is real, as only the rational is real, and Marx's classless society will fully realize that essence. More specifically, however, the term existentialism has been given to the philosophy of Kierkegaard, and those who already in the 20th century have followed his lead, but blending it with both neo-Kantianism and the no less immanentistic so-called phenomenology of Husserl, 1859-1938. By making a dichotomy between existence and essence, the tendency of existentialism has been to separate and to polarize the subjectivity of man from the objectivity of the world, thus fostering a mood of despair or anxiety in man, seeing himself alone by his inability to transcend his own temporality. Two chief types of existentialism have emerged, as mentioned by Pius XII in the quotation from Humani Generis. One, atheistic, such as that of Heidegger, 1889-1976, Merleau-Ponty, 1907-1961, and Sartre, 1905-1979, and another which denies the validity of reason in the field of metaphysics, such as that of Kierkegaard himself and Gabriel Marcel, 1889-1974. To them, we can associate Jaspers, 1883-1974, and other neo-Kantians, influenced also by Nietzsche, such as Scheler and Hartmann. The subjectivism of all these philosophers keeps them anchored immanentism, even when they speak of God and profess to believe in him, hence the statement of Humani Generis. When we begin in man rather than in reality itself, we can never transcend man. As happened before, there have been attempts by theologians to adapt some of these philosophies to the Christian faith. We have mentioned, for example, the case of Teilhard de Chardin and Bergsonianism, and although some of their insights are valuable, the overall results are always harmful for Catholic dogma, as Humanus Generis states.